first internet addiction facility has opened in the United States. For the low price of $14,500.
My God.
So I think you go in there, they lock the door and pull the plug.
You think they have activities? Like, it's like a camp of some kind?
Well, I hope so. S'mores.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 188, for August 20th, 2009. On today's show, we observe the reemergence of Guild Wars 2 and the flood of goodies coming out of Gamescom. Prep for BlizzCon, check out the new Total War game, make a difficult MMO decision, and Wolfenstein's comeback, hot or not. That and more, stay tuned. I actually had a couple other things on there that I didn't mention, didn't I?
That's okay. There'll be surprises.
There'll be extras.
Yeah, whatever.
Ahoy there, podcast downloaders. I'm Dan Stapleton, and I'm today's host and PC Gamer's Reviews editor. And my lovely assistants today are executive editor Logan Decker.
Hey.
Previews editor Evan Lottie.
Hello.
And our...
Sorry, go ahead.
Restrain yourself.
I am. I'm totally restrained.
And our podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Hello!
That didn't quite have the same... You should have a different accent. You should
nice try.
Yeah, go German.
Guten Tag.
There you go.
That was, yeah, all right.
Good. Okay.
Anyway, first off, we're going to shamelessly plug our new issue, which hit newsstands yesterday.
I don't have it yet.
It's the one with Star Trek Online on the cover.
Oh, I do have it.
Yeah, see?
I'm holding it in my hands.
You're a subscriber, right?
Yeah. This is actually my last issue before I need to renew, though.
Get on it.
Andy, get on it. What
I know.
The?
I just forget. And then comes with that big thing that's like, this is your last issue. And I'm like, oh my God.
You're aware of the consequences.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Those flyers don't mess around.
Wow.
We will come to your house and we'll burn it down.
I think
that was the old version. The new one is a little bit nicer.
You know, the large-breasted Vulcan is frowning at you right now.
I got the one with the USS Mazamune.
Right, yeah. Awesome. The subscribers get the starship. The, yeah. Newsstand is the ladies.
Newsstand's where the women's at.
Yeah. So the newsstand, you'll see a Vulcan, a Klingon, or a custom alien Starfleet chick.
She's blue.
Yeah, she's very blue, and she has kind of a spoiler on her head. You notice that?
Like
I think it makes it go faster.
Like a spoiler alert or like a car spoiler?
Like a Honda Civic spoiler. No, I mean, didn't Gary refer to it as like a carrying handle? It's kind of derogatory, but I don't know. We're bad people. Continue.
I missed that, yeah. Okay. But yeah, the Cryptic has some pretty crazy customization tools for their character creator. I mean, very similar to what they have in Champions in some ways, although it's for making aliens. But anyway, Evan and I were privileged enough to be the first two people outside of Cryptic to get our hands on it. And our impressions are inside. But generally, spoiler alert, we came away pretty impressed. So check that out. Anyway, none of us are broadcasting remote from Germany today, but we are following all the news coming out of Gamescom like junkies. And having been to a bunch of these things, I'm actually kind of relieved not to be there. I mean, like, you know, it's always fun to go to those, but at the same time, it's nice to be able to sit back and just consume the news rather than having to create it. Because while you're doing that, you're missing, you know, a majority of what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
But so it's you know, kind of refreshing to be able to sit back and watch this 5-minute Guild Wars 2 trailer, which you guys have all seen now, right?
Yeah.
Boy, yeah.
What were your impressions? I mean, this is the first glimpse of Guild Wars 2 since we announced it in our May 2007 issue. So it's been a while since we've heard a peep out of ArenaNet. What were your impressions, first thing?
Well, just as as someone that views a lot of trailers, sees a lot of game media out there, it's one of the best trailers I've seen, just in terms of the production. I mean, it basically starts off as animated concept art. You're sort of going underwater and it shows you this dragon, and the dragon comes out of the water, and then it shows you all these environments and worlds, and eventually becomes real-time footage, seemingly, and it definitely looks like in-game footage. But the quantity of stuff that they're showing there, is fantastic. There's a lot for fans to get excited about. It reveals a lot of amazing looking zones within the world. And yeah, I mean, just definitely game was immediately on my radar after seeing that trailer.
Yeah. I mean, it just looks dazzling, you know.
It does. It definitely does look fantastic. My impression from it was I saw all this like amazingly cool looking stuff, but I was left with virtually no impression of how the game plays.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the case.
Mm-hmm.
But the art is fantastic. I mean, it's just hands down. Immediately, I describe it on Twitter, I think, as Poseidon meets Peter Pan meets, I don't know, Lord of the Rings or something like that, just because the mix of fantasy and like airships and this crazy world that seems made out of like giant cubes of rock and, you know, ice world and things like that. It's just really appealing to me.
The flyby with the flaming pylons, you know, that was just, oh man.
And not to rain on anybody's parade, but I mean, like Star Wars Episode One was also visually amazing. But yeah, once you get past that,
sure.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, looks aren't everything.
Yeah, but they sure bought a lot of attention with this trailer, you know.
That they did. Well, I mean, and anticipation was already you know pretty high for this game, considering how long it's been since we've seen anything on it.
Yeah.
And this is a good way to kind of make their comeback. What I was kind of disappointed is they didn't even like in their official FAQ they didn't mention anything about pricing, whether or not they're going to stick with their old model. They implied that they would in our old story. But it's been a while. A lot of things could change, and you know that just isn't as profitable as you know hooking people with a subscription fee, in the long run.
Yeah.
So although you know they did sell millions of units of Guild Wars and the expansion, so they obviously did pretty well with it, but not like a runaway success like it might have been had they gone with a different pricing model.
Not enough to put two CEOs into space. Just the one.
Right. But Richard Garriott had nothing to do with ArenaNet. He was all off doing his own thing with Tabula Rasa, and you know, look how that worked out. But anyway, do you guys see anything else coming out of Gamescom that you're liking? I mean, the thing that caught my eye actually was the new Borderlands screens that were just put out. That game is looking even better than it did when they first unveiled the new art style.
It is, and they've been definitely really generous with the screens that they put out there and showing the characters in greater detail and whatnot. And I think everybody's excitement level is definitely at its highest peak for that game.
Yeah, I think they made a really smart move with that art style thing. I mean, they did take a big risk with it. But I was talking to Norm Chan the other day, and he was saying that, you know, when he saw the game at E3 a year or two ago, it was just kind of blah. It was, you know, it was same old, nothing, you know, barely even registered with him. But now it's one of his most anticipated games of the year, which, you know, who knows if it would register nearly that much. I mean, obviously there are a bunch of people that don't like the art style at all, and you know that's fair. Not every art style is for everybody, but just the fact that it now makes such an impression when you see it, and it's so distinctively Borderlands, and you know can't mistake it for anything else. That's you know arguably worth a lot to them.
Definitely, I mean there is that sense of awe to some extent for the first you know half hour that you're playing it, I think, or seeing it in motion.
Right, and then after that, you almost kind of forget about, or at least when I'm playing a game, regardless of the art style, I almost forget about the art style after. You know, an hour or two of playing it, unless it's still doing like some kind of crazy, you know, really eye catching thing every so often. I'll just kind of forget about any of the style as long as the graphics are consistently, you know, good.
Yeah.
I'll just kind of get lost in the gameplay and only really notice it on rare occasions. So even if you don't like the art style in that respect, it's, you know, you'll forget about it after a little while anyway.
So the other thing out of Gamescom that I still need to educate myself about, but is very interesting, CCP, the people that make EVE Online, they're doing a console/PC MMO. It's going to be called Dust 514, which is already kind of a unconventional title. And the way I understand it is, okay, this is like the very high level stuff. I still need to, you know, talk to these guys directly. Basically, the console players are going to be having the FPS experience of the game, while the PC gamers are going to be doing sort of the RTS elements. It's sort of a genre bending situation. There's been a lot of talk about this sort of, you know, split between a shooter and an RTS for a long time, and this is something they're attempting, apparently.
Yeah, it sounds like ridiculously ambitious. I mean, and fraught with potential problems. Unless they have systems in place where the computer could take over for, like, say, nobody likes the one side of that game, and it just doesn't take off, but the other side is doing well. They have to have something in place where, if half of it fails, the other half can continue.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. I mean, logistically, it's a nightmare. I mean, how can they make this work? They did release a trailer that it seems like it's sort of pre-rendered, but in-game footage, mostly on the shooter side of things. I saw it at Shack News. If you want to head on over there and check it out, but it's in a sci-fi setting. I don't know, I'm sort of reserving my judgment and my analysis for when I have a better understanding of what this thing is.
Yeah, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on it. Anyway, next week is BlizzCon, and our own Josh Augustine will be on the scene there to get some hands-on time with Diablo 3 and StarCraft 2. I actually got to go down to Blizzard last month and play some StarCraft 2 single player, which the embargo has just lifted on that, so I get to talk about it finally. They had, you know, pretty much everybody down there. A bunch of us sat in a room and played the first 7 missions of the Terran campaign and Wings of Liberty.
Wow.
Which is the first third of the game. I guess they're going to have you know, Wings of Liberty and then the Protoss section and the Zerg section. Actually, maybe it's the other way around. Protoss.
Yeah. But there's set to be about 20 something missions, so that's about a third of the game you guys
played. Yeah, they're going to be, I think, 28 missions, 28, like, okay. Almost 30 missions is where they're in that ballpark. There might be a few cut or one added, who knows? Right. And until they finalize it, they're not going to say exactly how many missions there are, but there are going to be close to 30 missions, which are, you know, so it's a full RTS campaign. The original Star Trek, StarCraft, sorry, had about, I think, 28 missions as well. So it's a similar amount of content. And they're planning to do, you know, 2 more releases. They haven't decided whether they're going to be standalone expansions or regular expansions or full price or half price or whatever. But anyway, the first 7 missions of the game, like the first 3 are basically training missions. You know, you start with no base. You just got a few Marines. You're cleaning out Terran Dominion troops with your, you know, your rebel Marines. You're going through and cleaning out Arcturus Menx and his troops from a colony. And you go through a couple missions of that, and then the Zerg show up. So and you're fighting doing a defensive battle, and those first 3 missions are very conventional RTS. It's go kill everything or last until the timer expires. But after that, the other 4 missions that we played, Blizzard really got ambitious with changing around the victory conditions. So it's not just, you know, build up a force, go kill the other base on the map. It's there's one where you're evacuating colonists ahead of a Zerg invasion. So rather than, you know, go kill all the Zerg, you're just protecting these colonists convoys as they go from the colony to a spaceport, and you have to get a certain amount of them through in order to win the mission. Another one, there's an artifact that you have to capture from the Protoss, and the Protoss have this huge defensive structure set up, or not one structure, but a bunch of defenses set up around this object, and the Zerg are trying to get to it. So they're just throwing wave after wave of Zerg against the Protoss defenses, and eventually they're going to wear their way through the defenses. So you have to get to it first by, you know, taking an alternate route. So it's a little bit different than normal, you know, just get somewhere. There's a little bit of extra pressure there. And you can do things like, you know, trying to slow down the Zerg by throwing your own forces between the Zerg and the Protoss to prevent them from getting there first. Although I tried that and got my ass kicked. There's also one where the goal is to collect a bunch of like 8,000 minerals from this planet, where every 5 minutes the lower elevations on the map get flooded with lava, and that's where all the resources are.
Right.
So
I saw that in a recent video. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was kind of repetitive after a while, but for at least, you know, when you're getting the hang of it, and the mission doesn't last that long, especially if you conserve your resources and don't spend a lot of them to fight the few pockets of Zerg that are around there. It's just kind of a gimmick that is different in an RTS. It's not something you see all the time. There's also one where there's a day-night cycle. So every 5 or 6 minutes, it switches from day to night. And at night, there are just swarms of zombies that come and attack your base. During the day, you have to go out and destroy their infested structures with flamethrowers. So it's kind of I Am Legend-ish, really. Because if you don't get back to your base by the time, by nightfall, you're just going to get overwhelmed. It's a pretty clever mechanic.
That would make a great mod in and of itself. I'd love to just continually play that kind of mode.
Right, and you know, they're talking a lot about mod support, so they're almost certain that there will be, you know, mods capitalizing on some of these gameplay modes. And the other thing they're doing is that makes it really different from the single player, or the multiplayer rather, is they're adding in a bunch of units that are not balanced. They don't have to be balanced for multiplayer. So they've got like fire bats in there. They've got they've got medics for one thing. So they've got a bunch of units like that would unbalance multiplayer by making you too powerful, you know, making the Terrans more powerful than the other races. But they allow them to do things in single player that are just, they're just fun. You know, it's not quite as much of a balancing act. So they're actually changing their thinking about the single player, not making it a training ground for multiplayer, because in their experience that, and you know, I can vouch for this, that pretty much never works. I mean, you go through a single player campaign of an RTS and then go online and try and compete, and you just get whooped, because the strategy, the behavior of a human player is so much different from an AI. So it's a different approach to it, and from the look of it, I think it's got a very good chance of really, you know, bringing about some change in the way we look at RTS campaigns. It's a little bit less repetitive. Mm-hmm. The other big thing about it was the between mission menus, which are basically an adventure game, which was kind of a surprise to me. I mean, I was never a big adventure game fan, but one thing that a bunch of RTS developers always tell me about creating a campaign for RTS games is that it's really difficult to write a story and have that and convey that story in any meaningful way to the player, because, you know, all the characters are really small and you know, it's by nature they're dispensable for the most part. So what they've basically done here is to tell the story in a game mode that is more conducive to storytelling. And when you start out, like Jim Raynor, who's the main rebel guy, is sitting in a bar, actually he's just hanging out by himself for the first mission. But there are like a bunch of things you can click on in there. Like there's a Zerg skull on the wall. You click on that and he'll like reminisce about kind of the backstory, the last time he fought the Zerg. And it's stuff that, you know, later there are other characters you can interact with and talk to. But it's stuff that if you're not interested in the story, you can just click on the, you know, go to next mission button and you can do. Or you can just go and kind of explore and get more of the lore. And you do it with characters who are not just talking heads in a window like they were in the first StarCraft and like they are in most RTS games. Mm-hmm. So it's a very ambitious approach, and I'm actually looking forward to going through a lot of that lore.
Now, BlizzCon starts tomorrow, right? Is there any word on the multiplayer beta?
The beta was, you know, pushed back a little bit. Mm-hmm. They've run into some problems with Battle.net. They want to iron out first, and you know, of course, they're just, you know, bugs here and there. They want to fix, get it as polished as they can before it, you know, before they put it out there. And they don't want to put out a multiplayer beta with problems they know about. The entire point of a beta is to, you know, find new problems. You know, so if they put out a beta and it's, you know, just people are getting hung up on the problems they already know they have to solve, what, you know, what's the point? And also, and mainly the Battle.net stuff though is what held it up. So naturally, they're not talking about exactly when when the beta is going to happen. So
cool. Well, that sounds really good.
Yeah. So and now it's coming out in 2010. So.
Boo.
but yeah. So it will be playable at BlizzCon. So, you know, expect to see a lot more impressions of it pop up over the next week. There are also totally unsubstantiated rumors that Blizzard will be making a major WoW-related announcement. And by totally unsubstantiated, I mean it's already totally leaked all over the internet that they're putting out a new WoW expansion. But
yeah,
we'll be hearing about that more very soon. And that will almost certainly dominate the news for the next, you know, who knows how long. No information about that yet. I guess the other WoW news, another shameless plug, is that our good friend Dan Amrick, formerly of official Xbox magazine, is now he's still at Future. He's heading up an official World of Warcraft magazine called World of Warcraft Magazine. So,
first reveal.
Yes, very 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 original name, but you know, it's kind of a collectible thing. Plus, you know, it's going to have, you know, I guess the first issue is supposed to focus on the history of WoW in light of the fifth anniversary, which is coming up, and also strategy and tactics from top guild leaders, and it's on a nice, attractive collectible package for you. The subscription website will go live tomorrow at worldofwarcraftmagazine.com, so go give it a look-see. And you know, even if you're not a WoW junkie, a subscription would be a good gift idea for the WoW addict who has everything.
For sure, I'm really excited about this. I want to see it. Dan's a great guy, and I love what he's done for Xbox. But you know, I'm saying this having played maybe 2 hours of WoW in my life, and it's going to be a luxury collectible item, like you're saying, Dan. It's going to be 148 pages of adless content. You know, great access to the developers themselves and interviews and all that. I just want to see, you know, as someone that likes print and likes magazines, I want to see that kind of product and hold it in my hands. And I think Dan's going to do a great job.
Yeah. Moving on from the shameless self-promotion. Other con news came from last week's QuakeCon.
Yes.
There actually wasn't like a whole lot of stuff that I really noticed about like Quake. And there, I guess they had tournaments and stuff there. But what captured a lot of headlines was Bethesda talking about, or not talking about, the next Elder Scrolls game. It's just kind of funny that the most notable thing that happened at QuakeCon was from Bethesda. But anyway, Todd Howard, who is the executive producer of most recently Oblivion and Fallout 3, was quoted as saying that you shouldn't look for a new Elder Scrolls game in the near future. And all the gaming blogs, of course, heard this and freaked out, saying that, you know, Bethesda wasn't even working on a new Elder Scrolls 5, and you won't see it, you know, for, you know, years and years, which is, of course, about as likely as Bethesda telling a dump truck full of money that they should go find somewhere else to unload. That's crazy talk. Of course they're working on it. And there will be an Elder Scrolls 5. They're just saying don't look for it in you know, 2010. In the meantime, you know, we know that Obsidian is working on the next Fallout game, so Bethesda's got to be doing something, right? Todd Howard has to be earning his paycheck, so I think that's a pretty safe assumption. That's what they're working on. It's not on the immediate horizon. But especially with you know, now that they're done with all the Fallout DLC, which I guess they also said at QuakeCon that they're done at, after Mothership Zeta. That's the last one, and they're moving on to other things. So. And looking back at the five pieces of DLC, there was Operation Anchorage, The Pit, Broken Steel, Point Lookout and Mothership Zeta. I played them all. Did anyone else play all of them?
I played three of them.
I played every other, and it's mostly just because of GFW.
Well, you can now get them. You don't have to get through Games for Windows Live for at least the older ones. You can get them on a disc in a two pack. So you can get them at retail. I know you can buy them at Amazon. I'm not sure about. I haven't seen them on the shelves anywhere, but you don't have to deal with Games for Windows Live if you don't want to. Anyway, do you think that on the whole the DLC program for Fallout 3 was a success, or was it kind of blah?
It was mixed. I mean, you got to hand it to them for pumping out that quantity of content and that variety of content, in my opinion, in that short span of time. I can't think of another developer that's done that much DLC in that short span of time, and it's in their interest to keep gamers' interest by doing it that quickly. But I mean, a lot of it was to I'm talking about Anchorage, I'm talking about Zeta here, probably too combat centric for me, in a game where I personally feel like the combat doesn't work well in narrow corridors, per se. So yeah, I mean, for example, in Zeta, I don't want to give too much away, but you're abducted by aliens, and a lot of the game takes place on that ship, and you meet some other individuals on that ship, but you don't really get to interact with them in the same way that I thought you would. They're interesting characters that you didn't really get to talk to as much, so that seemed like a missed opportunity to me personally, even though fighting aliens was fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem with both Anchorage and Zeta was that Fallout 3 is a fantastic role-playing game and just kind of a mediocre shooter. But those two pieces of DLC did not have a single role-playing type decision to make. There were no different choices at all. Yeah. And I guess in Anchorage, you got to decide whether you wanted to, what kind of gear you wanted to take, but that it didn't affect anything really. Except how you fought, and yeah, it's not that great a shooter. So to focus just on the shooting is kind of a missed opportunity.
I know it would have been much more difficult for them to program. Would have taken more time, more resources. But imagine if one of those factions becomes a persistent faction within the game. I mean, like the aliens, they have a little base somewhere. They're somehow affecting certain quests. I mean, obviously, again, that takes more voice work. That takes more coding, but something that isn't as standalone as those specific two bits were.
Right. I mean, the shining jewel of the DLC collection is of course Broken Steel, mm-hmm. And that one, gives you by far the most value. It pretty much doubles the amount of time that you can play a character without hitting a level cap. It adds new enemies that appear on the general map to make fighting from level 20 to 30 more interesting. You're not one-shotting everybody. It also added some extra quest content where you actually did get to make some decisions not to spoil it, but there is an opportunity to do something not very nice at the end that you don't have to do. So it's Point Lookout had a lot of decisions to make. Although the main decision didn't really sit well with me because there was no like even sort of right and sort of wrong. It was all like the decision didn't seem to matter at all. But at least you got to make it, mm-hmm. In the pit, you got to make a very, a great moral decision at the end there, which was good.
I wonder if these did a lot better on Xbox than they did on PC. I mean, I'm sure that they're a success to the company because of how it seemed buzzed they were on, like the OXM show. They're always talking about each one and how good the pit,
how well they sold. Yeah, yeah. I mean they sold very well. I mean after they initially planned to just do the first three, and then after the first couple came out and they were just amazed at how many they sold, so they immediately slotted two more for production. So
it'd be really interesting to see the difference in numbers between the PC crowd and the Xbox crowd.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just in general, there are more copies of games sold on consoles. Yeah,
true.
So
per capita. And,
yeah. I think probably one of the biggest things that would have impacted their sales on the PC would be Games for Windows Live, yeah. The marketplace. It's just a pain in the ass to deal with. If they had put it on Steam or just sold it from their Bethesda's website, it would have done much better, I think, just, you know, in terms of being able to access it.
Definitely.
But that's all the fallout you'll get until New Vegas comes out. Actually, if you want to, you could go onto Steam. They just put up the Fallout 1, 2, and Tactics. The first two are really the only ones you should bother with. Tactics was kind of blah. Actually, Steam, for whatever reason, Steam put them up for $10 each, discounted to $9 for a 10% off introductory sale, which is weird. Or, you know, $20 for all three, which is really weird because on
for like $5.
Exactly. Good old games, or GOG.com, has them for $6 each. So that's even cheaper than the bundled price. If you bought them all, it would be $18 instead of $20. So I don't know why. And Interplay is the one that sets the prices, not Steam. So it's not Steam's fault. But it's like, why would Interplay put them up for more than they already put them up? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And like, they put up the DRM-free version for cheaper than the DRM version. It's kind of odd. I mean, I guess GOG just might not be big enough yet. You know, not enough people know about it for a lot of Steam users to know any better. But at least our podcast listeners know better. Go to GOG, not Steam, for Fallout.
And know better.
Yes, don't be a fool.
Anyway, another big announcement is the next Total War game, which is Napoleon Total War. That one is you know, when I first heard about it, I kind of thought it would be a standalone expansion, or like an expansion at least for
you would think, yeah.
Sure, because it's sort of the same. I'm correct me if I'm wrong. I don't really know my history that well, but isn't that the same era?
It's pretty much the same era.
It is, but you know, they're actually doing some. I can see how it breaks away. They are changing a lot, not a lot of things, but some fundamental things are being changed. Like instead of these long sort of, you know, almost a year long campaigns, you know, now we have 2 week turns. And the reason is because just to back up into a little history here, if you recall your history in 1812 when Napoleon marched into Russia, he started with an army of like 550,000 people. And by the time they got back, there were 12,000 left.
Whew.
I mean, it was one of the biggest wipeouts imaginable. One person out of 50 came back from that campaign. Wow. Complete disaster because they didn't take it into account the Russian winter. And the thing I've seen, like a visual chart, of the march, and you just see this giant block, and you watch it wither away as the year goes on and winter approaches, and it just vanishes, and you see parts of the army broke off and then just disappeared. And I think that's kind of the key to this whole game, because now you can use that as an offensive and defensive tactic. So like when you're marching, you know, when you're going toward one place to another, you have to make sure that you're marching, that you have villages, towns, or supply depots along the way. Because if you don't, you know, you're going to get slammed by the weather. But the really interesting part to me is that you can use it sort of offensively as well, in that if you march through a village and you've got, you know, somebody on your tail, you can torch the village. And just raise it, you know, and destroy their ability, you know, to get rest. And,
it's about time, frankly.
Yeah, you know.
For that.
And, you know, they'll get there behind you, and they'll see all that smoking ruins, and they'll be like, oh, man.
What a drag.
Yeah, right. You know, you've peed in the river and all that, and it's just nothing's, you know. So that's kind of a whole new, you know, angle on war, you know. Mm. And it does take into account that these things have wiped, you know, simple miscalculations have wiped out hundreds and thousands strong, you know, mm-hmm. of tough soldiers. And so that'll be really, really interesting to see how well they integrate that into battles.
Yeah, it also kind of raises the debate about you know, what constitutes a standalone expansion, whereas what's another full price game.
Yeah, very much.
I mean, like, in my personal opinion, as long as you're getting the same amount of content as you did in the first game, that's a full game.
You know, I tend to be even a little more liberal than that, and that even if you price it a little lower and it's shorter content, it's still a full game to me, you know, because if you can play it without having the original one, and, you know, you still get an exciting, you know, game, an exciting product, hey, you know, I'm set.
Right. Yeah. As long as you get the gameplay value out of it.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean,
this seems to be such a different sort of approach. I mean, for the whole Total War series, that I think, I can see why they said, okay, this is a whole new thing here.
Yeah, right, they're shifting the mechanics. So
exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's even more to it than that, but you'll see in the story we've got upcoming.
Which issue is that?
That's in November. Yes, November 9.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Can you imagine what it's like?
Sorry, December.
Sorry. What was it? December.
No, November. It's November. Sorry. November. It's November.
Yeah. Okay.
See, even we can't keep these issue dates straight because they have nothing. They have nothing to do with the actual date they ship out.
Yeah.
And the issue Andy you're holding right now was that's the October issue, right?
Awaiting confirmation.
It should be.
Yes, October.
Right, and the date today is August.
Yeah.
Back to Napoleon real quick. Sorry. I mean, can you guys imagine what it's like for the, I don't know, few hundred Napoleon historians and hardcore PC gamers out there to have like a game made for you that is like so completely up your alley in your wheelhouse? Those guys must have...
They're excited.
Those guys are the Napoleon historians anyway. Probably just would freak out about all the concessions made for existing gameplay.
Well, now you guys know how I feel about GeForce.
Yes.
Rodents? Games? What? Why wasn't I told?
Lasers? Jetpacks?
Exactly. Ah, guinea pigs with jetpacks. Oh, God. Oh, God. Mayday.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm totally cool.
I'm going to videotape your next session with that because you're pretty genuinely enthusiastic. I mean, he's not correctly conveying the excitement. It's pretty wild.
With their little fat butts move when they run. Oh, man. Sorry. No, I'm cool. I'm cool.
Logan just gets totally turned on when he plays.
Shut up. Hey, all right. I'm cool. Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm a little creeped out here. I remember I mentioned earlier about the internet addiction camp. Mm-hmm. There's the United States' first internet addiction camp opened in Seattle someplace. And, you know... whatever, you know, if you feel like you're addicted, you can go there and whatever. But, you know, I'm looking at their website now and it's a little weird. It's like here's their schedule for Monday. It's a sample schedule. Wake up, breakfast, get fit, chores. Okay, you're paying $15,000 and you have to do chores. Okay, now stop right there. Discovery quest at 10:30. Yes.
Whoa.
Follow through, lunch, life quest.
Wow.
Vocational skills. I don't know what that is. Evening chores. Okay, stop again. Dinner time, reflection group. I don't want to go to that. Mindfulness for a half hour.
And so that's the brainwashing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mindfulness. Then personal time and lights out.
But personal time. That's why I go online, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I Facebook.
For me, personal time is after lights out, but whatever. Their rate schedule is just check this out. This is what made me think it's like kind of dodgy. The application fee is $200.
Whoa.
The two-day screening interview fee is $800. Airport pickup fee, if needed, is $200. 45-day retreat center stay is $14,500. The participant fund account, mandatory, is $1,575. And the parent workshop, which is optional, is $1,000.
Wow. These guys are not messing around.
So 45 days at 14 and a half, that's $322 a day.
Yeah. And that's not, you know, there's all those other, you can add like, you know, several thousand on top of that. And I'm not even really sure what they do, but, you know, there's so, life skills, exposure coaching, and...
This is for rich people who think they're addicted to the internet. Is that the idea?
Pretty much, yeah. But they do have a quiz you can take on, you know, that, you know, to find out if you're addicted, you know, like...
First question, please enter bank account balance.
Exactly. Oh, but they also treat texting addiction.
Oh, okay.
So just so you know, it's internet gaming, texting, and video game abuse.
Mm. What's the URL for this?
NetAddictionRecovery.com.
Good Lord.
And the signs and symptoms. Are you neglecting friends and family? Changes in sleep patterns? Physical changes such as weight gain? Ooh.
Too bad the WoW magazine doesn't have any advertisers. Because they would be, yeah, right? They would be number one.
Man.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, if anybody goes, hey, let us know how that went.
Yeah, text us and let us know. Yeah.
Twitter us. Facebook.
Just four characters. Help.
Yeah, so you can feed your internet addiction, if you want, with a couple of new MMOs that have just gone gold. Both Aeon and Champions Online went gold last week.
Dun, dun, dun.
So those will be launching within the next couple months. Which one are you guys more excited for?
Champions.
Yeah, wait, Champions.
Straight up.
They're both MMOs?
Yeah.
Okay.
you're not excited about either? Is that what you're saying?
I just can't play MMOs. I don't have that much time to dedicate.
Who does?
Yeah.
But I'm also in the Champions camp. Although I've played some of the Champions beta, I haven't played any Aeon yet. I don't know, the universe of Aeon, from what I've seen, just it's very pretty. Don't get me wrong, but
that's gorgeous. Yeah.
Whereas the joy of running around in a superhero outfit I you know created myself and beating the crap out of a bunch of thugs. Yeah, I can get behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm so excited about the game. I think I would be willing to, with Logan and whoever else would be interested in participating, let us know in the comments if you are, creating a supergroup, which is the equivalent of a guild in the game. You know, how about a rodent-based supergroup, Logan? I could be, I don't know, the flying squirrel? I don't know.
Uh-huh. All right. I can
hamsters,
see this.
Rodents.
Uh-huh. Pikas.
Pikas.
Let's
yes.
not forget the pika.
Of course, they carry flowers in their mouth.
Uh huh. I'm on. I've yeah. signed me up.
Before cool. you get any ideas, bats are not technically rodents.
Damn it.
Mm. Yeah, but they support rodents.
They're allies. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like the idea of being superheroes with my friends. You know, I've heard of people in City of Heroes and even in the beta. I think. Forming like groups based on Mega Man bosses and things like that, and Power Rangers or whatever. So, I mean, the customization is definitely a good part of it. And, you know, being in a comic book context that isn't Marvel, isn't DC, that you're not familiar with, that you're not like, you know, that you're sort of discovering together for the first time, maybe. So,
you're not playing as Aquaman's bitch, is the difference.
Yes. Not washing Batman's car, as you so aptly put, Dan.
Yes. Yeah, that's what has me, you know, not so high on DCU online is you know, you're going to be in a universe with all these superheroes, but you're a superhero who you've never heard of, and it doesn't really work very well. Although I guess technically Champions has the same thing. It is based on an existing franchise that nobody really knows much about. Yep. And not a lot of people do. So, so it has that, but to a lesser extent. I'm very much looking forward to Champions and you know, Aeon, if there are any Aeon fans out there, we'd love to hear from you. Do you think it's going to, you know, do well, or is it going to be kind of one of those games that does well in the Asian markets, but not very well here? That's kind of the impression I get from it, that it'll do well overseas, but not here.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Cliff out in Anaheim, California. Just want to comment on some of the hardware upgrades that you guys were discussing last week. For me personally, it probably was when I installed my first 3DFX Voodoo card. That was just substantially so much better than what the graphics card I had in my old IBM PC had. And it really just made Quake 2 for me just totally come to life. So for that, for me, it had to be the upgrade of the video cards to a real Voodoo standalone. Anyway, thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, man. I remember first running GL Quake.
Yeah, to going from just a 2D board to a 3D acceleration was was huge. Although technically, I did not own a PC at the time when that happened.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember the Quake 2 transformation where you're like, whoa, there's circles and colors?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
But I enjoyed it vicariously through a couple of my friends who did have PCs, and I spent a bunch of time at their houses playing their games. So.
Hey, PC Gamer crew. This is Steve, the Chief Ass Gamer. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on the Champions Online supposedly open beta. Now, it's only open if you have a pre-order or you subscribe to File Planet for their month, actually paid subscription, which to me, I mean, only a fool pays to be in a beta. But, I mean, there's a lot of hype around Champions Online, so there's more than enough people willing. I just think it sets up a dangerous precedent because, granted, yeah, you're getting to play the game, but you're also helping the company. And it's, like, it's sort of like paying to do a job, no matter how enjoyable that job is. So I just want to get you guys' opinion. What do you think a paid beta is a good idea or not? Thanks. Bye.
A good idea for who?
That says it all, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people consider it a privilege to be, you know, be in a beta test. So, and you get to see the big new thing before anybody else does. So if you're willing to pay for that, you know, by all means. And if there are enough people that are willing to do it, enough that Cryptic or any other company putting on an MMO feels like they can get a good enough pool of testers that way, you know, then why not? They're not required to give you anything for free. In fact, that's bad business. If you can charge for it, why wouldn't you? And you know, one other thing it might benefit the game, you know, the testers, in that the people that are willing to pay to play it are the ones that are going to be more, you know, they're going to actually put more time into it. If it's just, you know, anybody can play it, anybody can download and play it, then you get people that aren't really that interested, that, you know, aren't going to spend any time with it.
That's a really good point. And you'll get people who fill out good bug reports, you know, right, and they do it correctly and not just, you know, oh, well, I have to do this, you know, to stay in the program, right, that kind of thing.
So, I mean, long story short, it's very a very good idea for publishers if they can get away with it. If not, then, you know, just give it away for free and take what you can get. Yeah. But, I mean, gamers as a whole don't really have any grounds on which to complain about it. It's like, if it's not worth it to you, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's simple as that.
This is Waffles coming to you from the great state of Texas. First off, let me say that I like the new format of the magazine, and I love listening to the podcast. My question is related to hardware. I've got two 8800 GTS video cards running off SLI, but one of them has gone bad. Since the other one is still good, do you think it's worth it to try to find a replacement card, or to just wait it out till the good one goes bad and then upgrade? Thanks for all your hard work on the podcast and the magazine. Keep it up.
I can actually diagnose this. I think Waffle's problem is that he's playing games in an amphitheater.
Ah, yes.
In a concert hall. Yeah.
That classic one.
I just hate when good video cards go bad. Oh. They turn to drugs.
Dude.
They drop out of school.
Don't let your video card go bad.
They talk for them, you know?
They talk back to their parents.
I have all those VHS tapes. Video cards gone bad. All right.
Video cards with low self-esteem. Yeah.
It's all dependent, entirely dependent on your budget. My inclination would be, I mean, you know, those have probably served you well for a long time, probably at least a year, I'm guessing, if not longer. And, you know, for me, like a life cycle of a video card's, you know, never more than 2 years, very rarely. And so my inclination would be to trade up at this point. And then, you know, you can sell your 8800 GTS or just give it to, you know, little brother or something like that. Because I mean, it's highly unlikely that the 8800 GTS will break down like the other one did. You know, it's a very rare for hardware to kind of die out like that before it just becomes so slow that, you know, you can't tolerate it anymore. So you'll probably, if you want to stay on a budget, just stick with the 8800 GTS and it'll last you at least in another good year if you, you know, manage your settings well. But, you know, if you can afford it, go ahead and spring for like the 285, which is fantastic. You know, it doesn't cost that much anymore these days, or you can go with the 260, which is an incredible bargain right now.
You know, I wonder though, what do you think a replacement GT 8800 GTS would cost him on, say, eBay?
Oh.
I mean, because I mean, somebody else might be doing the same thing. Somebody, you know, upgrading to the new hotness.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you can get it for $50, you know, or you know, somewhere around there,
yeah,
it it might be worth replacing it. And if, you know,
that's a good point. I get a little nervous with some types of hardware on eBay, but let's have a look here, because there, I think the 8800s are going. They're still going for about 90 retail. So let's check the eBay.
The thing is, the weird thing is, like, this is one of the cases where the old technology comes back around to be expensive.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, they do for some things. I mean, for video cards, I don't really know if that happens, because I mean they get actually outdated, and there's no reason to use them. I mean,
well, that's
with RAM,
true, yeah.
With RAM, for example, you get like DDR1 RAM right now is like really expensive. If you wanted to upgrade an old machine with an extra gig of RAM, that'll cost you, because they don't make it anymore, and there's just not a lot of it out there in the capacities that you'd want.
Yeah. The eBay scene is a little sketchy. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Whereas with video cards, they become obsolete. People get rid of them, but they still work as well as they ever did. I mean, getting them off of a retail shelf would be probably more difficult, because just they flush out their stock.
Yeah.
But if you can find somebody who's getting rid of theirs, why not?
Yeah. They're pretty expensive on eBay. And remember, you have to match up the exact card, including the amount of memory. Yeah.
Right.
And it looks like, you know, I'm seeing...
it's like $100. 640s. You know?
I know. It's crazy. It's like...
I would just get a new
some
one.
Some of them are more expensive. Yeah. Yeah. Than new ones.
What about all this DirectX 11 hubbub that came out of QuakeCon?
Forget it.
Don't bother.
Don't even worry about it.
There's not even hardware that supports it yet.
Nope.
It doesn't exist.
Not yet.
No hardware or software.
Yeah, I mean, you can still play games in DirectX 9 mode, and they look just as good as the DirectX 10 versions.
For the most part. There are some noticeable differences in a few games.
Sure, yeah, but it's just they're not crucial. And so to even begin thinking about DirectX 11, just don't. You don't need it for Windows 7. You can have a DX9 card with Windows 7 just fine. So don't sweat it.
You know, actually, if he gets a new graphics card, but he keeps the GTS 280 in there in the second PCI slot,
PhysX,
exactly.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
It is not worthless. Don't just throw it away if you're gonna play some games with some PhysX acceleration, because that actually does make a difference.
His little brother's gonna kill you.
Logan, what the heck have you been playing?
All right. Well, I already gave up the whole GeForce thing, just because, you know, it has rodents and it's actually fun. You know, they're running around doing rodenty things. But I finished. I'm still playing Resident Evil 5, which is just amazing. The thing is, the one game I'm going back to, I cannot wait every day to come home and play it some more, is Wolfenstein. It's just, I don't know what it is. I can tell you tons of things that irritate me about the game, and yet I can't wait to play it again, because it just feels right. It's just fun, you know. My you know, beef is, like, you know, there's audio stuff and the way some voices loop and all that, but, you know, I was supposed to go see District 9 tonight, and the plans fell through, and I'm actually happy, because I can go home, you know, stuff some chow in my mouth, and then go play more Wolfenstein. It's just driving me nuts. I love it.
I don't think you should be happy about not seeing District 9, though, because it
is. No, awesome. I'm going to this weekend, so that's why I didn't, you know, I'm not sweating it, but I'm just glad that I'm having so much fun.
You know, and kind of an unrelated note, and actually I'm going to be trying Wolfenstein 2, I just got my copy of it, but unrelated to District 9, did you hear how it was, like, originally the production was going to be like working on the Halo movie, but then that fell through, so they repurposed some of that stuff for District 9. As the director was going to be working on Halo and did some pre-production for it. What I actually thought was kind of weird about that is District 9 reminded me so much more of Half-Life 2.
Yes, especially the moment.
Hey!
It's a quick moment. Wow. And it's not that much of a spoiler.
Yeah.
You did not.
I know there's a lot of stuff that is reminiscent of Half-Life 2. And if you don't want any spoilers at all, you can skip ahead 30 seconds. But
no spoilers.
Things in, I'll just refer to things in Half-Life 2 like dog, like the Vortigaunts, and the weapons are all pretty, you know, pretty reminiscent of a lot of the stuff in District 9. And Logan, you can uncover now. There we go.
Yeah.
It's safe to come out.
Jeez.
There's been a ridiculous number of articles on various blogs about how the movie mirrors the sequence and the pacing of a video game and the way the characters develop and whatnot. And it's definitely true, but I don't know if that makes it a better movie or worth critiquing in a way, but that's all.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that.
Well,
that's
a good movie.
I don't see it. I'll have to read the articles, but I don't see the parallels there.
It's a cool movie in its own right.
There's definitely a co-op mode in a certain sequence of the movie.
Lol.
But, well, and isn't that true of any buddy movie?
I don't know.
Buddy cop. That's the buddy cop movie is the co-op game of cinema. anyway, Evan, what do you
think? G-Force would make a good movie.
I've got some great news for you. Look.
That's like the best joke I've ever heard.
Oh my gosh. I've been getting back into TF2. I have not earned one single goddamn hat though.
Oh.
I'm really upset. But no, I've been sort of sporadically through our Steam group, which you can find if you go to steamcommunity.com/group/PCG. If I'm bored at night, I'll just kind of throw up an event on there to our 5,900 some members and just say, hey, come play TF2 on our server. And that's been sort of fun impulsively. Otherwise, I've, of course, been continuing to play Arma 2, working on that. And I started playing a game called Osmos that just released on Steam this week for $10.
That is an awesome game.
Did you get a chance to look at it?
I did. I was playing some last night.
It's really the best way. It's already been described like this, but if you play the first level of Spore, where you're sort of at the primordial stage, I guess, if I remember correctly, where you're sort of consuming things that are smaller than you and you're growing in size. It's like that. You're sort of this orb of goo, basically, and you're propelling yourself by sort of thrusting around the board. It's from a top-down view again. And depending on like the size of your thrust, you lose like proportionally that amount of your own mass, and you can only consume things that are larger than you. So you have to avoid the
smaller.
Smaller than you. Thanks. So you have to avoid the things that are larger than you, of course. And there's different types of sort of creatures and effects, and there's gravity and orbiting and things like that. So it's just like a very fun, relaxing, extremely ethereal game.
The thing that throws me off and infuriates me in kind of a good way, a challenging way, is when I'm using the thrust to push myself towards an object that I'm just a little bit bigger than, and the act of thrusting, because I'm propelling a piece of myself off of the main.
Let
you have something to say, Logan?
Let it go. Let it go.
I'm fine. What? I didn't say anything.
I don't even see how that could be dirty. I was avoiding the word thrust even. Anyway, as I was propelling myself by launching off a piece of myself, and that piece of my losing that piece made me smaller than the thing I was trying to consume.
Right.
So all of a sudden I'm trying to put on the brakes and launching pieces of myself in the opposite direction, which is the direction of the thing that I was trying to eat, and throwing pieces of myself into that makes that thing even bigger. and sometimes you're about to eat something and it eats another, like two other objects collide and it becomes bigger than you and you can't stop in time and you die. It's really, really kind of it's an amusing game. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of variety to the stages. I mean, in some cases you just have to get bigger and it's sort of a race and there's like competition among, every other little, entity in the space and you have to get bigger before them. And there's also a sort of puzzle-like levels where you have to avoid, big pieces that are in place and sort of solve, how you get from point A to point B. I'm definitely enjoying it. I sort of switched over to that from Audio Surf, which I was playing as my sort of cool out, chill out game previously.
So Andy, how about you?
I got back into Call of Duty 4 this week for some reason. I was like, well, I got to play the old game, get ready for the new game again. And I'm having some issues. It keeps locking up on me. I can't figure out why.
Really?
Yeah. So like every half hour or so, I have to quit out of it and start over again.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen Call of Duty crash.
I know. It's just, it loads so fast. It runs so well.
It's
rock solid.
Yeah.
I do have to say that lockups that happen between like 15 minutes and a half an hour after you start playing sound a lot like heat problems to me.
Yeah, and my video card is notorious for a lot of heat issues.
I would take it out and then take a compressed air gun and then just blow the dust inside the card out.
Yeah, I also think
not
my
just
CPU
around
might
it,
be
get in there. Yeah, in short bursts too. Don't get anything wet in there.
Oh yeah.
What video card do you have, Andy?
I still have an 8800 GT.
Yeah, that's a great card.
It's still rocking. Yeah. It's always
probably one of the that may be the greatest video card I have ever encountered.
Agreed.
It's
still so solid.
Yeah. I mean, dollar for dollar in terms of longevity, design, fantastic. Yeah, when civilization is over, that's going to be one of the artifacts, you know, that we'll have.
Yeah, when aliens come to sort of like make us justify our worth in the universe, we'll hold that up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're like, oh.
So I guess my playlist then would be, I've been playing, for review, I've been playing Raven Squad, which is kind of a cheapy hybrid shooter / strategy game, which and the gameplay is just kind of you know, I don't recommend it really. But what makes it stand out is the awful voice acting. It sounds as if I guess the best description I've been able to come up with is it's like watching a junior high school play put on by the ESL kids on Ritalin. The combination of bad accents, like non-Americans faking American accents and faking other foreign accents, and just complete flat delivery. And this is like, I see some guys over there with big guns. It's just terrible. Just terrible.
That's grisly.
Do you guys have any favorite awful voiceover moments or sound voice acting moments?
I mean, it's not like a terrible thing. It's sort of a necessity to the gameplay mechanics. But in Arma 2, which again, like this is the funnest game I played all this year. I'm in love with it. I bought it on my server for it. It has hands down the most annoying voice acting in the world.
You haven't played Raven Squad yet.
I haven't. I mean, within the game, there's sort of a enemy reporting system that's automated. So the AI, if they see an enemy, even if your guy sees an enemy, he'll say, you know, Rifleman, 500 yards to our west, whatever. And it's sort of like a Mad Lib or just replaces those values and those that script with different elements that don't necessarily sound good together. And I just to demonstrate this, so it doesn't sound too weird to anybody that hasn't played the game or hasn't watched video of it, I hopped into the editor and recorded this quick battle that I'll play for you guys real quick.
Contact! 3. Target that. Chopper. 2. 4. Target that. Chopper. 6. 8. Engage that. 10. Engage that. 11. Target that. Missile soldier. 2. 4. 7. 12. 5. 13. 9. Target that. Chopper.
He's down!
Man down! 9. He's down! Move! Go! Cover! Go! Cover it! Faster, Scott! 5. He's down.
Hostile down. 5. Is down. Man down. 2. Is down. 1. Is down. Push off. 6.
10. He's down. 8. He's down.
4. Is down.
Yeah. So you get the idea. It's at its most ridiculous when people are swearing and like, your comrades have died and I am talking like this. They're all represented by numbers.
I thought it sounded like a remix.
It sounds like any time they say more than two words, it's you know, splicing something in and just terribly out of place.
It reminds me of like the very beginning when they started doing sports commentating in games. It was like,
That
was a great shot by number 42.
You're definitely right.
I think there's so many you know, like European adventure games where they really cut corners on the audio, and you'll have, you know, Europeans doing not one, but trying to do two or three different American accents, like what the Texan's supposed to sound like, what the Floozy's supposed to sound like, and it'll often be the same guy. And there was one that was particularly egregious. It was called Nibiru or something, Age of Secrets or something. It was years ago. And it was just a disaster. You could tell the same guy was doing the same, you know, three or four different voices, and they were all mangled. It was just awful. You know, just subtitles. Just give me subtitles. No problem.
Yeah, there was one European adventure game I played several years ago called Dark Shadows. It was similarly bad, except they kind of knew it. Mm-hmm. So in the end of the game, they made like a techno mix where they just, you know, played some of the crazy lines in there.
Nice.
And built them into a song. That won it a couple points, but it was still a terrible game.
You know what? Actually, this is kind of unrelated, but I just want to throw it out there. One of the coolest things that I've ever found after finishing a game was when you finish a longest journey, it unlocks. You don't even know about this before. When you finish the game, it unlocks for you the outtakes from the recordings.
Nice.
And it's hilarious because, I mean, just like movie outtakes, you know, they're talking and you've got some guy who's supposed to be like an elder and he's very dignified. And then he screws up his word and he goes, oh, crap. And everybody breaks up and starts laughing. And you hear her trying to master a name over and over again. And she keeps screwing it up. And it was so charming to end the game that way.
It reminds me, if you get a chance, you should go to I think YouTube and search for Thundercats outtakes or Thundercats bloopers. If you ever watched Thundercats as a kid, it's really, really hilarious. Anyhow, we should probably start wrapping this thing up. So, first of all, we invite you cordially to visit PCGamer.com to subscribe to the magazine or to send us a question for next week's show, which we'll try to play on the air for you and answer. You can email it to us in MP3 format at PCGamerPodcast.com or call us on the phone at the number which Andy will now read.
1-877-404-1337, extension 724.
Also, we invite you to follow us on Twitter at PCGamer. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/PCGamerMagazine. So for myself, Logan Decker, Evan Lottie, and Andy Bauman, we will see you all next week. The hell just happened? Hello?
What? I don't know. I got you.
What?
Nothing happened here.
Okay. I just heard a noise.
Oh.
A Skype noise. Oh, spam. That's what happened. Anyway, where was it? Where was I going with that? We might want to edit all this randomly. Blah. I forgot to talk about the crazy Razer mouse, but oh well.
Oh, dude.
It's not going anywhere.
I thought that thing was fake.